Stories from California Cattle Country is produced by the California Cattlemen's Foundation and receives support from the California Cattle Council. We've created this podcast for those wanting to connect with the people and practices of far-flung ranches and dairies throughout California through hearing stories from and learning more about families in cattle country.
I met Rich Rouse a handful of times at cattlemen's conventions all over the state. He, like me, has the gift of gab, and we've enjoyed a few wide-ranging discussions. And I came to find out that his operation is here in Placer County, in Lincoln, just about an hour northwest of Sacramento. Normally, ranches are in out-of-way places, often hours from the nearest gas station. When visiting the Likely Land and Livestock Company in Modoc County, its proprietor, Billy Flournoy, would drive 2.5 hours each way to the nearest Costco to secure provisions for the ranch cookhouse. He usually returns with Costco pizza for everybody. The bulk of our most recent episodes have been at ranches that are kind of suburban or city adjacent. Rich's ranch is situated in Lincoln, a city of about 50,000 people, with the fast-expanding suburban population. In fact, Wikipedia lists as the fastest-growing city with a population of at least 10,000 people in the last decade. His ranch is about a 20-minute drive from the center of town. The town center is at the base of the foothills, but in that 20 minutes driving, you ascend a few thousand feet into a blue oak savanna. It's a beautiful area, and developers and buyers with deep pockets have taken notice. Much of the larger contiguous parcels have been subdivided into ranchettes adorned with large homes. Ranches almost always exist on properties unsuitable for farming. This is no different here. The Blue Oak Savannah is marked by exposed tooth-like granite outcroppings and scattered trees and limited ground cover. Rich often assists another rancher a little bit north named Wally Roney when he needs to move cattle or vaccinate them, etc. In doing research, I came across an article written in 1998, posted on the Competitive Enterprise Institute about ranching in some of the crustier parts of California. It was so well written, I figured I'd just quote it directly. It reads, "The Roney Ranch is part of one of the most unique landscapes in California's Sacramento Valley, the Vina Plains, covering some 150 square miles in the northwest of Chico. The plains have an austere yet compelling beauty. Generally devoid of trees, it's an area of windswept, broad, open vistas, where thin, nutrient-poor soils lie atop an impervious layer of clay. The rains fall in a generally brief and undependable winter period, followed by 8 to 9 months of drought. The winter rains produce a brief, vivid prairie, carpet of native grasses and wildflowers, but are too brief to make the land suitable for farming. The only sustainable form of agriculture on the plains is cattle ranching." Now, the author wasn't listed in the article, but I will include a link to it in the podcast description. Now, Rich Ross is an attorney and does a lot of work in Sacramento. His choice to settle on this piece of land was kind of based on the shortest commute to California's capital, Sacramento, the incredible view, and the fact that it has water, which is an unusual feature in the area. When I reached out to Rich, he was out of state traveling and couldn't meet for a few days. Cell service in the area is sketchy, as is at most ranches. And when we managed to connect, I asked him if we could meet Friday afternoon, and his reply was, "Sounds good. How about a ham sandwich?" Now, true to form, prior to the tour or to the interview, he made me a ham sandwich, and it just so happened to be National Sandwich Day, and he makes a good sandwich. In this episode, we speak with rancher Rich Ross about his unique location and why a 77-year-old attorney would choose ranching as a way of life, and about his partnership with another rancher, another 77-year-old, Wally Roney. We also talk a little bit about wolves, which is the first that we've done on the podcast. Also, I've been on a bunch of side-by-side rides with ranchers, and this one, well, it was the most dynamic. I'll be posting a video on Instagram in the coming days and potentially buying a side-by-side for myself. I'm Ryan Donahue, and this is Stories from California Cattle Country. Real quick, something to add to the glossary, and this is from beef-cattle.extension.org. Rich mentions EPDs. Now, EPDs, or expected progeny differences, represent the genetic component of an animal's phenotype that is expected to be passed on to the next generation. Studies have shown that using EPDs are 7 to 9 times more effective than selecting based on actual phenotypes. While most producers think increasing the economic efficiency of their operation by changing management systems like grazing schemes or calving dates, or utilizing different nutritional programs, the importance of genetic selection is all too often overlooked. If selection is based on non-genetic factors, as in the case when selecting on actual or adjusted measurements instead of EPDs or economic indexes, then an inefficiency is actually built into the cow-calf enterprise. It's critical to understand how important EPDs are, and to know breed averages, and be able to use percentile ranks in order to identify potential sires that fit the desired breeding objective.
My name is Rich Ross. The family has farmed and ranched in this area since 1910 when they came up from Contra Costa County. Home operations have always been at Live Oak. I purchased this land in the foothills of Placer in order to have cattle as well as orchards, primarily at the beginning to have cattle to practice cutting horses on, but that was 30 years ago. This is what we would call a blue oak savanna, and I blame Haley Mills for my location. Because if you're old enough to remember Parent Trap, her father lived in the Carmel Valley in a Spanish Revival style house on a blue oak savanna. And I loved not so much the movie, but the house and the situation. So I have here a Spanish Revival style house that I designed sitting in a blue oak savanna with a view off across the Sacramento Valley at the Sutter Buttes and on the right day, 15 other counties.
You know, running cattle kind of varies. There's some places, usually on the coast, sometimes in the valley, where people can run cattle year-round on the property. Are there any issues with running cattle here?
The climate is good pretty much year-round, but what drew me to this parcel in particular is that it has two canals on it from the Nevada Irrigation District, and I'm able to buy ample water in the summertime for irrigation. So the seasonal grasses that I depend on in the winter and spring disappear when summer comes on, but I'm able to irrigate a goodly amount of ground, and that keeps the cattle here year-round.
So I don't know if you ever Google yourself. In Googling you, there's a famous rapper named Rick Ross. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's from Miami. He has a place in Georgia where he actually has a couple head of cattle and some buffalo. And one of the first stories that I just accidentally clicked on thinking it was about you, it was Rick Ross and how he had two buffalo get out. Neighbors had some issues with it. They were just kind of milling around. He said, give him a carrot or whatever. But I understand that typically it's a 365-day-a-year job ranching. And you were out of town on some family business, came back, and you had some issues when you got back. Can you just explain that? Or do you want to?
No, you mentioned Rick Ross. There's a fellow that I have drinks with off and on over the years who is a Major League Baseball manager. He's down in Texas now, and I guess came in second best for the World Series. But he always says that he won't confuse me with the other Rick Ross because I'm only a third the size and I don't have very good rhythm. But you're right. I took last week to go back to Colonial Williamsburg in Virginia for a family foundation meeting. I had tried to open up a side pasture to let the cows have plenty to eat while I was gone. Somehow there was a gate open into the yard itself, and when I got home at about 1 o'clock in the morning a couple of days ago, there were a few dozen cattle out there in the yard. They'd broken off one of the hose bibs, so I didn't have any water in the house, and basically broken off everything that was breakable in the yard, and the yard looked like a feedlot.
You showed me some of the damage they do, because they kind of were milling around and I think looking for feed or something.
And they look for feed, and they're just large and curious. And so when you get 1,500 pounds and they see something, they may taste it and they may nudge it with their head. They may nudge it with their body. With that much weight, they do a lot of damage.
You've mentioned this to me, and we can cut this out if you want, but that you're 77 years old. You're also kind of a one-man show here on the ranch. Can you explain to me like the appeal, what you love about it, or just the kind of things that you have to go through day to day? Like you were just showing me all the equipment that you have. It's like, oh, if I have to pick up a log, I have this. Why do you do this?
That's a good question. You know, yes, I am 77 and I run pretty much with a guy named Wally Roney. He's 77. We're a month of the day apart. After a wolf attack up in the mountains a week or two ago, as we were gathering, the cattle became very aggressive on the herd. And it was two 77-year-olds and the two truckers, one of whom was 79, the other one was 81. And we all asked each other, why are we still doing this? I suppose it's indicative of the industry as a whole and that everybody is getting older. And Wally and I ask ourselves why we don't retire. And we don't know what we'd do if we did retire. you know, I do my own plumbing and electrical and welding and fence building and doctoring. And, you know, if it needs to be done here, I do my own irrigation. You've seen the fireplace I've been working on now for a couple of years. You need a project, you know, and there's money in the bank. I could hire somebody to do this stuff. But what are you going to do if you don't do anything? I mean, you have to have something to do.
In my research, I was reading about the Roney Ranch. And Wally, can you talk about your partnership with him?
Wally and I have something of a symbiotic relationship. We're the same age. He has no help. I mean, he's running on hundreds of thousands of acres, but it's basically him. And he occasionally has some hourly help. But when it comes to gathering and sorting and shipping, it's Wally and me. And he comes and helps doctor my cattle. I help him gather. We help each other. And I think that's another part of this industry. It's one of the things that draws me to it is the fact that, unlike some other industries, people in the cow business tend to step up and help their neighbor. So Wally and I help each other on everything. I was going to ship some yearlings on up to Tehama because when I get overly crowded, I ship cattle up to his place. We break them so they're ready to go to auction. We'll give them a second set of shots. We'll put a little more weight on them. He's got some medical issues up there right now, so that's not going to work. So I'm going to go up tomorrow instead and pick up 5 or 6 tons of hay. And yeah, I do that myself too. I mean, that's why I have a flatbed and a truck. Maybe it's a desire to be self-sufficient.
In California, oftentimes you have to move the cattle seasonally to available feed and things like that. I noticed this is one of the few times I've ever gone to a ranch and there hasn't been a dog, you know, milling around. I don't know if your opinion on dogs is controversial. You and Wally have an interesting way of moving the cattle. Can you just explain that a little bit?
Well, dogs, if you use dogs a lot, can be very helpful. But if you don't use them very often, they become counterproductive and are more apt to startle the cattle than help. And something that's come to light lately is whether or not the cattle get used to the dogs and have more of a problem with wolves. Wally has some thoughts on his neighbors who use dogs and whether that makes them more susceptible to wolf issues. Wally and I, as far as moving, we used to do everything on horseback, and then we went to horseback and quad depending on the terrain. And I don't know, half a dozen years ago, I was with Wally and we were swapping quads for horses after lunch. And I turned around, Wally was up on a big rock climbing onto his horse. And I said, Wally, you gone English on me? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, only the English people use a mounting block to get on their horse. And he said, Rich, I ache all over. I think that was the last year we took horses. We can cover 5 times as much territory. I think I put on about 500 miles a year moving cattle on the quad. Wally probably does 3 times that amount. Well, the horse should be beaten to death. But if you're moving a bunch of cattle and all that Roney allotment land up in Lassen County is open range, so we'll move cattle tens of miles in a day, and you're doing 3 times the miles that the cow's doing because you're not just walking behind the cow, but if one pops out on the left, you have to go push him back in. One pops out on the right, you have to go up and push him back in. So you're doing an awful lot of moving. The quads just make it easier. And then when you get them into the pen, just a little clucking and come on, girls, let's get in the bus. Let's go on, get started. Usually works. That's all you need. You don't need any stress and yelling and screaming and bullwhips. You just say, come on, girls, let's go on over here. That changed drastically a couple of weeks ago after we were hit by wolves.
And we actually talked about this when we weren't recording, but I was talking about when I was in Modoc County, I was at Likely Land and Livestock, and how I was really curious because they had one calf taken by a wolf. I was surprised because I'm like, you guys lose calves sometimes. Like it's something that happens. What's the deal? Like, why are you so concerned about it? Could you talk about how are the animals behaving after that one of their own was taken?
We had academic tell us that there was a wolf that showed up on a trail cam one day while we were gathering and sorting. The next day while we were gathering on in, I found the skeletal remains of a calf that had been killed probably the day before. It was still all red. And at that point, the cattle turned angry, and particularly the mother of that calf was on the hurt. She wanted to kill anything around, and we got them into the pens. Those pens are 6 to 6.5 feet high. These are 1,500 pound animals that jumped over those panels, crushed them to the ground. I have photographs I posted on Facebook last week of these animals that at full run and jumping over these pens. They just totally destroyed the pens because they have that fear. And we've had them in the past run 15, 20 miles where they're chased by the wolves. They don't recover from that in a day or two. Some people have equated it to post-traumatic stress syndrome. I have pictures of cattle that were chased a year before where they just still look like they came off the Bataan death march. They just never have put weight back on again. It has permanent effects. And then you can go into the academic studies as to the effects on fertility and weight gain and a whole multitude of issues that come from the stress of these wolves.
Most times when I visit a ranch, it's a 2 or 3 hour drive out into kind of the middle of nowhere. I think you're kind of 20 minutes from a Walmart here in Lincoln. Are there benefits to being so close to town, or is it more of a negative, or is it kind of just in neutral?
Well, there's a Walmart grocery store of some type in Lincoln, but the nearest Walmart's in Roseville. So that is 40 minutes drive.
Okay.
And what's interesting is the Ronies, with their thousands of acres of open space on the Vina Plain, are only about 15 or 20 minutes from town. I look at the Robertis and their gorgeous place out there in the middle of the Sierra Valley, and they're like 30 or 40 minutes from downtown Reno. Because of my twisty, windy little dinky roads out here, it takes me longer to get to town than a lot of them. But we are smaller parcels, and that has its own issues. We don't open trail cattle around here. You are getting fewer and fewer people with commercial livestock. They tend to be two or three project animals for FFA or 4-H. Their ability to doctor, they just don't have the facilities. It's a different world from what used to be open grazing in this area.
Now, this is something I don't know if it still applies, because I think I read it in an older article about Roney Ranch. But I know you said that your genetics are the same as the Roney's genetics. And then I read something where he said that they crossbred the animals of African stock to enhance their grazing and browsing abilities. Is that still something in place? Or
I don't know that they ever had any Afrikaner type stock. He did historically use a lot of Bos Indica, Indian cows, Brahmas. You don't see much ear in the Roney cattle anymore. It's pretty much all been replaced by Black Angus. I had a mixed lot here. I used to buy at the local auction, and it was whatever was a good price at the auction. So it was a real menagerie of cattle out here. I ended up buying a collection of banged heifers from Roney Land and Livestock, or Land and Cattle, whatever the official name is. So all of my breeding heifers came from the Black Angus off of Roney, and Wally and I rotate bulls through our place. So the bulls here and the bulls there, we trade back and forth. So the genetics are identical.
What's the benefit I've talked to a lot of ranchers, and it seems like there was a move maybe a decade ago, maybe a little longer, of moving from a certain kind of cattle to Black Angus. What's the benefit to having that breed?
You get paid more is the number one issue, I think. Some people think you had better marbling. I'll leave that to people to fight over a bear on. But the price definitely is better for the Black Angus as opposed to some of the other breeds.
And that's just become, they have a restaurant named Black Angus. Like, people are just familiar with
the breed. Well, there was the old Saga restaurants, and they had Saga-owned Black Angus restaurants. But the Black Angus industry has done a very good job of marketing. I think the meat's of high quality, and it's uniform. I enjoy them. They have a pretty good disposition. And one reason to rely on Wally so much is he is an excellent connoisseur of EPDs. So he pulls out EPDs for light birth weights and rapid weight gain. I've only had to pull one calf here in the last 15 years, and that was a neighbor bull that got through the fence and knocked up one of my cows, and the calf was just way too big. So I saved the cow, lost the calf, but that's the only one I've had to pull because we've got low birth weights and they calve easily. and then they gain weight like gangbusters. So what's not to like?
This is something like we've actually been discussed a little bit on the podcast, but what's entailed in pulling a calf and the reasoning behind it? How do you know when it's time to, you know, pull a calf?
If your cow's down and it's got a calf head sticking out of its back end and it's not coming out, it may be time to go and assist. So that can take various forms. I mean, work the front legs on out so that they're outside of the cow, cross the legs and put a chain on them, you know, a soft chain, we'll say, and usually have a handle on it. And then you pull on the calf to help it out. They sell some stuff that's a very slippery solution. Some people just use liquid soap, dish detergent to just kind of lubricate. Sometimes they have some ratchet things that you can put against the pelvis of the cow and ratchet them on out. I've in the past hooked it up to a quad and very gently tried to pull. Some are easier to pull than other, depending on how big the calf is. Sometimes that calf may be a breech like you have with humans, where the head's coming out last and you're apt to end up with a dead calf. You know, every case is different. Sometimes the calf is just too big for the pelvic opening and then you've got a real problem. As far as I'm concerned, that's when you call a veterinarian.
I want to thank you for allowing me to come out and giving me a tour of the ranch and making me a ham sandwich, which was delicious. And it was happened to be National Sandwich Day. But
sorry it wasn't beef, but, you know, you with short notice.
I might have to cut that out, yeah.
You got what they had down at Costco.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
I'm currently charging the batteries and packing for a trip to Imperial County to interview owners of two feeder operations. I've never been to Imperial County. I think the closest I've been was the one time I went to Coachella. I've also never been to a feeding operation. The closest I've been to that was driving down I-5 next to Harris Ranch. Feedlots are a critical part of animal agriculture and often misunderstood. The next two episodes will be from Imperial County, and that's the county on the bottom right of the state of California. If you have any feedback for us, you can email me at ryan@calcattle.org. Thanks for listening. Every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling.